landlord. If I need you to pay your rent on time, when I'm not collecting checks, I'm listening to Antibalas on KWVA, Eugene, 88.1. It's dirty!
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Anarchy Radio, November 7th, kwvaradio.org on the internet, archived by early tomorrow morning, archive.org, and you can call up at 346-0645. In fact, in about 10 minutes, we're going to get a call from Portland. Some of the Primitive Skills anti-civ folks up there, find out what's been going on there lately, including a recent visit by Derek Jensen, among other things. Want to announce this at least once. A very important hearing 2 days from now, Thursday morning at 9:30. That's November 9th. Yeah, November 9th. At the new federal courthouse, also called the Death Machine. I remember that. Somebody wrote in to the Weekly. And, you know, they've wiped out part of some buildings downtown, and you... I don't know, it just seems like you can see it from all over, and it's so massive, it's just scary. The Death Machine. A woman wrote to the Weekly several weeks ago, maybe even months ago. I thought it was pretty apt. It's a big, scary old thing. Well, this has to do with the four remaining non-cooperating, quote, Green Scare, quote, eco-terrorist defendants, Jonathan Paul, Nathan, Joanna, and Daniel. And this has to do, I believe, with the, it's all about NSA wiretaps, National Security Agency wiretaps, possibly illegal ones, and maybe other methods of evidence gathering in this whole long prosecution that started with the arrest last December, and we're coming up to that 1 year anniversary. So it's all about that, and there are people that are conjecturing might not even be a trial if the government doesn't want to reveal some of their methods, some of their people, and so forth. I guess that's possible. These are the four who have not given evidence against anyone else and are holding firm on that. Thursday morning at 9:30 at the new federal courthouse. Well, I guess there was an election exercise today. We were just out front. People were saying, oh, is that today? But I overheard somebody, it's a couple of hours ago, saying, if you don't vote, you got no reason, you got no grounds to complain. And that's another way to look at that. It's if you do vote, you got no grounds to complain. I think it's very arguable that... You're guaranteeing that things get worse the longer you play the game that's set out for you. And, you know, one thing that, I don't know what to make of this. There was a letter, today's campus paper, by Andy Dolberg, publisher for the Oregon Commentator. Isn't that the right-wing cretins?
The Hate Magazine.
The Hate Magazine, right, every issue. Why I hate this and that and... Eugene sucks, and U of O sucks even more, and so forth. Which, you know, is in itself isn't so crazy. But I'm going to read part of this. It's a letter. It was labeled, "The U.S. Political System Doesn't Deserve Your Vote." I'm going to quote from the middle of this. "Whatever your motivations for voting, consider the following. Every vote cast is an endorsement of our system. Think of all the issues you wanted to vote on because you think something is going wrong. Have you ever thought that the current two-party system is a source of some of these problems?" So forth and so forth. "You're against the Iraq War? Tough! You voters made it legitimate. You want to change the system from within the system, but all the voting does is add fuel to the fire. So stop saying, yes, please give us more of the same, and join me while I refuse to support this flawed system where the greedy and perverse lord above us. You can do something to change the system on November 2, and join me in burning my ballot at noon in the EMU amphitheater." Well, this was published today, so I don't know if anyone showed up back on the 2nd. Isn't that weird?
I hate voting.
There you go. Carl said it. That's right. Part of the hate motif.
Exactly. You
gotta hate everything.
Yeah.
What do you know?
Otherwise, you're just a lousy hypocrite.
and a hippie and a whatever, you know.
No, you're the bitter old
hippie. I'm the bitter old hippie, right? But there are probably other hippies that they hate. I don't know. Maybe that's... sometimes you look for these right-wing things and you wonder, well, maybe there's a libertarian streak. Maybe they're not all unsalvageable or something. But these OC people seem not too libertarian. This guy's an out-and-out anarchist. Well, let's see. Some of the news here. This is a good one. This happened over the weekend in Montreal. Maintenance workers were cleaning up two Montreal police stations Sunday that were rammed in the same night by two different cars. No one was injured in the incidents where stolen cars were propelled at the buildings at high speed, police said. There were no occupants in the vehicles. In the first incident, which happened late Saturday night, a car with an object placed on the gas pedal smashed through the front window of an East End police station coming to rest in an unoccupied conference room. A similar incident happened early Sunday morning, but the car didn't penetrate the front of the building and only hit the corner of a wall. Creative stuff there, huh? Maybe they weren't voters either, huh? I'm not getting sound back on the on my headphones here.
We'll have to fix that.
It makes me insecure.
What's that?
Carl will have to fix that. There we go. Wow. What was the problem?
You had the volume down too low.
Oh no. I turned it down too low. Technical skills. It's a good thing somebody has some. Okay, and let's see. Also on the weekend, well, there were bombs. This was switching to Mexico City. Bombs exploded at Mexican political and financial targets, rattling a country already nervous about unrest in a poor southern state, that would be Oaxaca, in a deep political rift from an acrimonious election back in July. Bombs at the top electoral court and an opposition party's headquarters and a Canadian-owned bank. You know, there is still stuff going on in Oaxaca. How long ago was that? Well, it was last week, the attack on the city of Oaxaca, in which three people were killed, including the American anarchist journalist Brad Will. And I mentioned that the EZLN is trying to support the defenders of that uprising there. The other campaign, headed up by Subcomandante Marcos, of course, and they've issued a couple of things over the weekend. But I hope I don't sound like I'm too picky here, but I'm going to quote part of this. As the other campaign, we do not recognize this border. He was speaking in Juarez, while in part talking about the people of Oaxaca and their struggle. We consider our compañeros on the other side of the border to be part of Mexico, part of us. We recognize that Mexico does not start in this line, but rather much deeper. Well, you know, maybe I'm being picky here, but it sounds like nationalism. What is the part of Mexico, the nation state of Mexico? Is that really the point? And are indigenous people, do they consider themselves primarily Mexican citizens, or at all, or part of Mexico? You could say that co-opting indigenous people is the objective of some people. Anyway, this is one from Istanbul, and this just happened yesterday. There's always there are several activities, protests and so on, that have to do with, well, it happened every 6th of November because it has to do with the military coup that happened back in 1981 and the resistance to that, and there are different themes or different aspects to different events that happen in Greece, or rather this is in Turkey. The anarchists there was a, and I think this is pretty relevant for a college radio station to be talking about here. The topic this year, talking about there were various students as part of some of the protests. Well, the anarchists this year changed the topic, pointed to education itself as a source of evil, and made the demonstration against education after they met at 11:30. This was Monday. As certificated zombies. Certificated. I like that. They walked in front of Istanbul's oldest university's portal, There they burnt their uniforms and certificates and opened a banner that said, "Let's demolish the system." Before they left the square, until next time, anarchists presented certificates to students under the slogan, "Don't waste your youth, certificate is here." Meaning, they got their own they got their own certificates, which don't have much respect for the university. How about that? In Uganda, this was announced today, Makerere University lecturers strike. I don't know how long this was going on, but it took a violent twist after students became involved and engaged in a riot in Uganda in the capital city. Riled by a delay to resolve the lecturers' demands, the students rampaged through the university, looting, barricading roads, and setting bonfires. Lumumba Hall residents lit bonfires at 7 p.m. this was last night, and moved from one hall to another, mobilizing students to join the strike. And early this morning, violence erupted again when students burgled the guild canteen, could be like the EMU, I guess, vandalized it and emptied it of beer. Well, not like the EMU. And the struggle went on with tear gas, water cannon, armored personnel vehicles, and the students who made this strike by lecturers far more interesting, it sounds like, then set fires on all the roads in the university area and at the main gate. So that was Uganda. And now here's another one. Well, this is just, this is interesting. I've never heard of this one. In fact, I think it's quite new. A longing for collapse press has kicked off, and this is from Paramus, New Jersey. There's a post office box, which I'll give you in a second. A longing for collapse press is an anarchist, boy, this print is tiny, anarchist distribution run by anonymous enemies of the current order. We are dedicated to spreading information about animal and earth liberation, anti-industrial, anti-civilization ideas, political prisoners, prisoners of war updates, indigenous native struggles around the world, and practical skills related to direct action, animal liberation, and wilderness living. We are interested in helping people to start distros in their small towns, as well as touring with political bands or projects sympathetic to our motivations. Great, and they're hoping for contacts. They can be reached at P.O. Box 8085, Paramus, New Jersey, 07652, or you could email them at guerrillaheart@yahoo.com. That's guerrilla, G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A, not gorilla. Guerrillaheart, one word, at yahoo.com. Very nice to see this. This just kicked off at the end of October, I do believe. And I found this kind of interesting. This happened last week. 36 turkeys liberated before Thanksgiving. And this was dedicated to the Shack 7, or more precisely, the 6 that were convicted and were sentenced last month for, mainly this was a, well, it really was a speech issue, but they got prison sentences because they were talking about militant activities against animal torturers, basically, and they took their name from the Stop Huntington Life Sciences campaign of the UK, and this is has spread, if you will, not that animal liberation activities are new to the U.S. But anyway, what I found somewhat stupid, actually, was a whole ton on InfoShop, a whole ton of replies to this brief communique, including some real dumbbell ones. Well, I think I'll resume this later because it kind of leads into some other stuff. I bet we have Urban Scout on the line here. Is that the deal?
Urban Scout.
Oh, good. Hey, what's thanks going for calling. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's been going on up there? Since I think we talked in late summer. Yeah.
Yeah, since the camp.
Right.
Quite a bit. We probably the biggest thing is we got Derek Jensen up here last weekend, and there were probably like 400 people, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, super.
Crazy.
That was right in Portland?
Yeah, we had it at this space called Disjecta, like this old warehouse.
Oh.
But we're shooting like a short on sustainability, and so part of that was we interviewed Derek for the video.
Oh.
And then we did a talk and then a couple workshops on creative writing with him.
So, great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Got a lot out of that. 400 showed up. That's mighty nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great turnout.
Huh.
And we got a website up, which is kind of huge. We've had a website kind of go up and down the last couple of years, and finally we have one that's, you know, going to last for a while, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think you saw it, actually. And you're... Go ahead. Trekkers Northwest is part of the... is you sort of affiliated with that? Is that part of your project up there?
It's sort of like we're kind of cooperative programs. I mean, Trekkers Northwest is a for-profit that teaches wilderness survival and animal tracking and stuff like that, and we're more focused on, Myth Media is more focused on the mythological aspects of indigenous survival.
I see.
You know, how all indigenous cultures basically enacted mythology, and that was through hunting and gathering and the different things that their mythology trained them to do. So what we're trying to do is take those old stories that we know that taught a sustainable way to live and see if we can adapt them to modern times to return people to, you know, some sort of land that exists after civilization collapses.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like a... I hate using the Noah's Ark metaphor, but, you know, we're trying to collect these indigenous stories and just kind of... stories that teach people how to live with the land and hold on to them until civilization collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And by holding on to them, I mean literally storing them in other people's brains. You know, through whatever kind of media that we can promote the sort of sustainable lifestyle with.
I see. Kind of reminds me of the Wild Seeds projects that people are trying to get a hold of those before they're gone.
Yeah, actually, I talked to a couple people that were doing that project. We had a lot of lot to talk about, and just a sense of like metaphor and philosophy versus physical seeds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
And are you doing programs or outings and so forth in the rainy weather too? I bet you are.
Yeah. I mean, 6 months out of the year, you know, it's soaking rain, pouring wet, but. I'm doing a program now called Urban Scout Sunday School. It's sort of a joke, but
post a lot.
And that's through Myth Media, and I'm teaching just kind of some indigenous survival skills that I know. Plus, just you know, while we're working on skills, always collapse comes up, and we talk about what we're going to do. You know, I mean, basically, kind of where we're at right now after having Derek here and a lot of the stuff that the core group of Myth Media has been talking about, you know, it's like we're already in the midst of collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Just something that we can't really notice until it's over, you know what I mean? But at this point, we feel like it's already happening all around us, and, you know, we're just trying to do the best we can to get ready for the big crash.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're quite right. It is underway. There are ecosystems collapsing. There are all kinds of signs and degradations that are going on. It's hard to miss, and yet, of course, the official thing is a denial always, so it's great
totally.
To see that. So there were 400 showed up. Was that an evening event?
It was just like a talk, and he did like a Q&A afterwards. It probably lasted like, let's see, well, we opened the door at 6:30, but it didn't get started till 7:30 because there were so many people like down the street that we were letting in, and there was this... just kind of it got kind of clustered at the front, but we went from about 7:30 until 12:30. So that was like 5 hours.
Gee, terrific.
We did probably 2.5 or 3 hours of his sort of lecture or his bit that he has, one of them, and then he did like another couple hours of Q&A.
It sounds really successful.
Yeah, it was. And it was just great hearing all the different people's questions. And, you know, he doesn't sit up there like a guru and answer all the questions. It's like, he's like, well, I don't know, I can't really answer that. What about the audience? You know, he'll throw it back and everybody can kind of come up with an answer together. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's a better way to do it, to have more dialogue instead of just a one-way deal.
Interesting.
Good.
But yeah, the Sunday school, I just started doing that. And that's basically, I'm gonna starting April 1st, I'm going to live as much as I can as a hunter-gatherer in Portland and videotape as much of it as I can. And every week I'm going to put a blog on urbanscout.org that has like what methods I've used to get food and shelter and water and fire that week. And just in an attempt to, you know, not only inspire people, but also for myself. It's like, kind of what I've been telling people is, you know, even though I've been practicing survival skills and studying mythology for like 8 years now, I still feel like a novice because there's no culture you can immerse yourself in to learn these skills. It's all been destroyed. And a native child, it took them 9 to 12 years to be able to survive without their tribe in the wild, and that was growing up in a million-year-old culture designed to do that, you know, to train them to be able to do that by that age.
Right.
And so we don't have that, you know, but we can use what we have to sort of create that immersion program. And so that's kind of what I'm doing, is catapulting myself into a program, but also simultaneously I'm going to be videotaping it and broadcasting it on the internet.
Gee, that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm pretty. And so the Sunday school is kind of a way that I can get a little bit of an income and actually buy food from the store, because, like, I basically am kind of pretending that I'm an infant in an indigenous culture. And, you know, I wouldn't be expected to have to survive, hunt and gather all my own food immediately. You know, it would be a couple years before I would be having to participate in that. So basically, instead of elders or older hunters who are bringing back food and gathering, and I've got a surplus of money that I can use to buy while I'm learning the other stuff.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I think that's really important to point out, because, you know, it can be so daunting. We're at such a disadvantage having all that has been stripped away, and here we are without that context, as you say. We don't have
that
living culture.
Not only that, but, I mean, with all the, you know, the biodiversity has been decimated. So not only are we not taught how to live off the land in such a deep way, you know, 9 to 12 years of a total immersion, but the majority of the animals that were consumed here by people are gone. You know, so it's not even that we've been untrained or unlearned all this stuff. It's also that the food sources that were here for other people are no longer here.
Yeah, of course. But you're at the same time doing this in an urban setting. That's just terrific. Wow, what a challenge.
Which is even more, you know, desolate.
But maybe all the more inspiring when people see that you can do things and you're out there doing it.
Exactly.
Oh, super.
And the other thing too, you know, I mean, I could do it in the woods. I could go away, but my family and friends are here, and to me, you know, humans are socially organized creatures. We're not supposed to be alone by ourselves in the woods. I don't think that's natural. So, you know, half the reason I'm staying here is because this is where my community is. I don't think that a bee is a bee without its hive, you know, and I don't think that people are people without a tribe.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Wow. Excellent stuff. This is great. What a cool report, and it's just, yeah, I can see that this is going to be exciting, and it's going to give a lot of help and energy to others. I bet it did for Derek. You know, he's had his health issues, and I bet he drew a lot from being able to plug in that you all are doing stuff up there.
Yeah.
Terrific.
That's great. Cool.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, no
Thanks
problem.
So much.
Talk to you later.
Okay. Keep in touch, man. Bye-bye. Urban Scout up in Portland, in the big city. That's challenging, and it's terrific to see somebody going after it with a realistic kind of ground level point of view too. These are the disadvantages that we find ourselves in, but you know, we got to start from where we're at and try to equip ourselves in the different ways that we can and in light of what's coming down the road. Well, I think we'll take a little music break.
This here's my new midnight special. I'll sing it a different way.
Boy, that guy's really articulate too, huh?
Ticket at the station, let's get on board. Don't want to leave it, but I got to go. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. The midnight special is a Santa Fe. If you ever go to Houston, you better walk right, and you better not stagger. Better not fight when you're walking down the main in the middle of the town. If you get in trouble with the jailhouse bound, when you wake up in the morning, the ding dong ring, you look on the table, it's the same old thing. Flapjacks and malay, little sawbelly fat. Don't want your breakfast, buddy, well, you won't get down. Get your ticket at the station, just get on board. Don't want to leave you, got to go. Get the midnight special, shine a light on me. The midnight special, it's a Santa Fe. When you wake up in the morning, rooster crow, don't want to go to work, but I got to go. Don't want to leave my baby, leave her all alone. When I come back home, buddy, wish you may be gone.
Expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Urban Scout, that was terrific to hear from him. I think we got a good contact going on with what they're trying to pull off up there. It's always interesting to hear the different moves they're doing, and they got a lot out of seeing Derek, and I'm sure it worked the other way around too. Well, it could be that Derek and I will be maybe in Europe in 07. He's, strangely enough, he hasn't been there, at least as when I talked to him a couple of months ago or so, he hadn't, and there's a desire for that, and there's no reason why that can't happen. Well, here we have the ad of the week, or should I say, these have been mostly, more specifically, the full-page New York Times ad of the week. Every week there's a great one. Check this out. Starbucks.
Oh.
You know Starbucks has our best interest at heart. It's called What Makes Coffee Good? And, well, of course, what makes it good is that Starbucks is working to strengthen the infrastructure of villages that support coffee farms.
Aww.
Exactly. Helping to construct bridges, dig wells, and will build water treatment facilities to ensure a healthy, viable community. Projects like these and many more help farmers grow top-quality beans in a sustainable, profitable, ecologically sound way. We do these things not just because it's the right way to work, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, everything is sustainable when you think about it. Certainly Starbucks. I bet McDonald's is, too.
Oh, huh? Yeah.
Of course. You know, shucks. Let's not be so cynical
about
it.
They used recycled cardboard in all of their food.
In all of their food. Oh, gosh.
I meant for all of their food.
For
all? I meant, wait.
Whoops. Oh, boy. But it's comforting and reassuring to know that...
I'm going to go out to Starbucks right now. I'll see you later, John.
Okay. The more you probably buy, it's the more sustainable it is, I guess, and ecologically sound. Yeah, it isn't just a monstrous monocultural leviathan or anything like that. No, it's helping little villages and everything like that. Yeah. Wacko. Well, I wanted to get back for a moment. I started to say something about the blowback. There was something like 36, maybe there are more by now, 36 or something responses to a post a couple of days ago about ALF action. I think this is in Virginia. 36 turkeys liberated. Just something dedicated to the Shack 7, the Shack 6, as I mentioned, and what a torrent of stuff. And you know what Urban Scout was mentioning, it was kind of coming back to me as well. Just imagine how threatened some people are by this stuff. It really is something. Here, for example, I'm not going to even sample these many little responses. The kind of dismaying thing is how many of them were fueled by some kind of threatened negative stuff. For example, there was a whole row of them about how I love to eat meat, you know, up yours. I love meat. Thanksgiving is about meat, and you know, just like, well, gee, I mean. Do you have to be ugly and stupid about this just because these people liberated 36 turkeys so you can just advertise that? Another variation, I live in the city and what am I supposed to do? You know, I can't go out and hunt or nothing. Well, for one thing, you could start thinking about the nature of the city, the viability of the city, maybe even why are you in the city if you're so... bereft of choices as you think you are, although Urban Scout doesn't see it that way, I guess. Or another one is, for some people in some places, choosing not to eat meat, this is related, of course, is a privilege not available to everyone. This is much like being in the city. You know, for example, well, part of it is, are you everyone? I doubt it. You're probably some middle-class computer jockey, you know, reading the discussion board like the rest of us. So with your privilege, that means what? That you, since it's not available to everyone in your opinion, then you're what, forced to eat meat and crow about it or what? I mean, this is a very typical leftist kind of thing when this thing comes up, or of course the broader, quote, primitivist scare that seems to exercise these people a lot. And so the reaction from somebody here, they got a little fed up with all this abuse about the ALF types or the vegan types or vegetarian types and the need to trash them. And this is part of one response. An animal liberation action happens and all the comments are about how you want to kill animals. What anthropocentric BS. Domestication and the subjugation and control of animals must come to an end. Anarchy reigns every time the cage door swings open. Oh, I think that's pretty nice. That's pretty sweet, you know, succinct. No, up yours. In fact. Yeah, but of course, it's not available to everyone. Well, I mean, I could say you can go into these high-priced natural food places and spend a fortune for a small bag full of stuff, and I readily see that, and I've said that myself. I mean, yeah, that if you don't have any money, you may not be able to afford all the pure organic this and that. That's true. But so does that mean you're going to just accept industrialized food and the mass torture and slaughter and truncated lives of animals and all the rest of it, all the rest of the whole system of mass society. It's no, that doesn't really follow. Here's something I didn't get to last week, which I think actually is somewhat connected to this in a certain way. And I mentioned a while ago Anarcho One from the Central Valley folks in Modesto area. And I think there's some very good stuff in this scene. I haven't even seen it all. But one thing came to mind, and I certainly don't bring this up to trash the zine, but there's one article has to do with labor struggles and also the situation of immigrants. But it starts out in this way. This is the first sentence, and the rest of it flows. Actually, these things are very separable. It's kind of obvious, but here's the thing I wanted to comment on. It starts, "Solidarity is the basis for all workers' struggles." Yes and no. I mean, actually, I think autonomy is the basis for all struggles that get somewhere. When you think about it, solidarity can, certainly not necessarily, but it can be not the most vital thing. And one could throw out, especially not to anarchists, maybe as an afterthought, you know, because I was reading this, solidarity is the basis for all workers' struggles, and I was thinking of my own experience briefly as an organizer in social services department in San Francisco for Progressive Labor Party, yes, the Marxist-Leninist Maoist party way back when. I wasn't a member of the party, and I wised up and well before I was asked to join the party. But I was part of, and won't go all into a whole big deal about this, but a kind of do-it-yourself union that was extremely militant, didn't have a lot of members, but always trying to raise hell, and we had some creative things going on. But anyway, when I was attracted to the militancy basically outside of the workplace of PL, I saw, for example, they would rumble in the streets, and I was attracted to that. Anyway, what their line was in terms of these people, the white-collar workers that I was supposed to be organizing, among others, what they were told was, you've got to join the mainstream union, not this radical rump union, this anarchist crazy bunch. You've got to join the AFL-CIO union, because by yourself you are nothing. You will not win any struggles unless everybody's in the union, unless you sign a contract to be represented by the official organized labor deal. That was it. And I thought to myself, gee, that's kind of appealing to a pretty conservative kind of backward impulse of people to say that you can't do anything unless you're part of this mass. That began to sour on me pretty much instantly, and the whole thing unraveled, my brief connection with PL. So in that sense, solidarity is the basis for what? Not much. You know, not that that proves the entire point, but that was instructive to me. When you put the whole basis on solidarity, another example might be from the not-so-distant past, fairly distant by now here, but, well, let's look at what happened in Seattle, and I think the cutting edge there was the people. It involved the people who took up property destruction as a tactic, targeted stuff in downtown Seattle, smashed all the windows and all that stuff, and was a very big thing, not because of the peaceful protest part, although that I think could be respected on its own terms in several regards. Anyway, so, but if you operated there in terms of solidarity as the basis for all struggles, workers or whatever struggles, then there would have had to be a vote. And since this is mostly cooked up by a lot of groups, mostly kind of liberal leftist groups, they would have voted against anybody adopting the tactics, the black bloc tactics of wrecking things in Seattle. So Solidarity would have defeated that. Solidarity would have been the key to a more pale, forgettable demonstration scene. You know, but fortunately, people didn't take it to a vote. They didn't. It wasn't a collective solidarity-oriented deal. It was autonomy. People, you want to do that? You want to link arms and do that? Fine, go do that. And other people may mask up and go do something else. And so, once again, solidarity, not the basic key, in my view. Well, what have we got in the background? That's very cool.
Oh, that's some of this Brian Eno.
Oh, Brian Eno.
Apollo.
Apollo. Is that new? Not new.
I've had it for a while.
That's pretty nice. 3460645 if you want to chime in. Comment on anything. Oh, here's an announcement. Ah, just popped into my head. After many a frustrating week and month and year of waiting and some premature announcements, what are we talking about
here? The goat.
The goat, the wandering goat on Madison.
Really nice mural on that building too, huh?
Yeah, it's coming on. And it's finally going to be open next Monday. That would be the 14th or something like that. Whenever that would be, next Monday.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's terrific. I became quite cynical, and I used to tell my friends there, hey, it ain't going to never open. I've just been saying this and looking like a boob, always saying, oh, it's going to open, getting all excited. But it is going to, and I think it's going to be worth the wait, and I bet that's going to be a very neat place in the Whitaker for a number of things, music and film and conversations and just a... kind of at the other end of the Whitaker from Sam Bonds, for example. We were talking about this. Maybe it'll be kind of like stretch the happening stuff in the Whitaker places to congregate. Yeah. I'm happy about that. Next Monday, the grand opening of Wandering Goat on Madison and what would be 3rd, right by the tracks there. 3rd doesn't go through, but that's where that's at. Meanwhile, we find out that by 2050, there won't be any seafood left due to the global collapse of marine ecosystems. But hey, I like fish. I eat fish. And anybody who doesn't eat a lot of fish is a weenie or something, I guess. They're... Oh, no. Wait, that's different. I guess I'm still sore about that. You know, they're the people that are the most domesticated. It's funny, and but they... because they cling to cities, they don't want to... Well, I mean, I don't think addressing your personal diet is the totally central deal, but why are you attacking these people who are trying to do something about that setup, that the whole the machine approach to things, to life and the rest of it? Well, this thing came out late last week, and a number of studies kind of coming together in terms of ocean species, and it's not just overfishing, but it's also pollution. And well, it's probably what is causing the ocean to become acidic to the point of destroying coral formations, and well, there's just an endless string of that. Fish farming is a horribly polluting thing. Up the coast here in British Columbia, there's a lot of that, and it's a dreadful. It causes disease, and the healthy systems are failing. Okay, couple of book things. There's a review. This was this week's New York Times Book Review, Aldo Leopold's Odyssey. He was famous in the 40s for a Sand County Almanac, which is quite the classic, and it even predates Rachel Carson's Silent Spring in terms of making some very important points. And Leopold stressed that, and his version of radicalism was the profundity that the biological community, after all, is the basis for the human community. How about that? And he said that the oldest task in human history is to live on a piece of land without spoiling it, apropos of what Urban Scout was saying. And here's a good quote from the early 40s. It is increasingly clear that there is a basic antagonism between the philosophy of the industrial age and the philosophy of the conservationists. So, looking forward to seeing this whole book by Julianne Lutz Newton, Aldo Leopold's Odyssey. It got a good review. But there is a lot of, there's a lot of health in the human ecosystem. Before I forget, I'm going to veer into this. In Columbia, South Carolina, there were triple homicides on two successive days, Thursday and Friday. I doubt if Columbia, South Carolina is real big, but triple homicides one day and another. And I saw this, don't ask me how, but the current issue, the September issue, this is the one on the shelves anyway, in the stacks, American Journal of Psychiatry, a study, it's called Prevalence and Effects of Mood Disorders on Work Performance in a Nationally Representative Sample of U.S. Workers. And there are 9 co-authors. Quite the study. Used to be, here's the punchline, the bottom line here. It used to be thought traditionally, the traditional thinking in the literature was that there's a lifetime prevalence of about 1% of the population in terms of bipolar disorder. The bipolar spectrum is now thought to characterize as much as 5% of the general population. Woo. Add that to the list. And today, rising affluence has made about 60 million Chinese, a number equal to the population of France, obese. State media reported, could be understating it, Chinese people are eating more fat and junk food. But hey, what do you want to be, some kind of vegan or vegetarian or animal liberationist or something? That was my editorial parentheses. Along with fewer grains and vegetables, leading to a high number of cases of high blood pressure, diabetes, etc. Industrializing society. Yep, there you go. And not too surprising, 2005 set a record for greenhouse gas levels. And here's something that tells you, oh gosh, the time is zipping by. Something about the system, in light of all this stuff, and especially in terms of global warming, two federal agencies are investigating whether the Bush administration tried to block government scientists from speaking freely about global warming, essentially, and censor their research. You know, when the system has to do that, it is getting to a place of blindness and rigidity and denial that is compromising the whole thing. You can't be in power and not know what's going on. I mean, this is just kind of like, it verges on suicidal. You're getting to the last days when you have to resort to that sort of thing. That's just nutty to try to block the something that's so well known, for one thing. Well, I had a whole long thing about technology here, but I guess I'll have to save this. Let me just comment on one thing from the current Z magazine. It's probably about pretty much all I have time for here. The Hollow Media Promise of Digital Technology by Norman Solomon talks about, it kind of says that technology would be fine, except broadband usually means higher fees, like cable TV, higher fees, and it might be cool for democracy, but it's too commercial and so forth. But the realities of, this is kind of the core point of Norman Solomon's piece in Z Magazine, but the realities of economic class and the leverage of concentrated capital cannot be swept aside. That is, they're in the way of the liberatory potential of technology, or even seriously disrupted by any technology. Well, that's true, but it might be also instructive to look at it the other way around. What is inherent in this technological progression? It isn't, in other words, just capital and class. It something goes deeper than that. Without denying that point, he's still enamored with the promise of technology. It's just that capitalism is in the way, and that's a very limited perspective. That's the technology is neutral, and it just depends on what you do with it. And if only the capitalist class weren't there, well, that's a strikingly it's becoming, even in the dominant culture, hard to swallow, hard to put that one out. Okay, I guess we're going to just kind of wind it up here, and I think we'll go out with some Randy Newman. Thanks to Urban Scout, and thanks for listening.